and half abandoned. They got a right to choose life they don't want to lose. I've got to speak up, won't you?
All right, we are back. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show, and yes, we are going to talk about abortion. Typically, we don't, because I never really wanted people to accidentally tune into the show and go, oh, it's another God show. Oh, yeah. Abortion, gays. The two-trick pony the Jesus people have only ever really reacted to. But it's time. And as we kind of come to the end of the show after 16 years, you know, I realize that there's very few things I just have a raging opinion on. Another thing, I never wanted to come across like some American talk show host, some Republican right wing, you know, I have an opinion about everything. I'm outraged about everything. But as someone who was an accident, and then I was chosen and adopted, I think I got a pony in this race. As someone who got his girlfriend pregnant, and then we decided to get married and raise our family, I think I have a pony in this race. But I've been told that I'm a dude, and I've got no say in this. I think that's ridiculous. I am also, though, very aware that it isn't my body that is growing life. But at the same time, I played a role in this life that are my two kids. And also at the same time, I do hope there is a creator. I'm not a certaintist in that area. I'm not certain that there's a God. And my word for faith has been changed into hope. I hope that there is a good creator. I do see purpose and design and intricacies when I study any ecosystem on our planet. And newborn life is in itself its own ecosystem in many ways. A lot of this discussion has come down to, well, when does life start? Does it start at conception? Does it start at birth? And now that the conversation has changed from when does life begin, you know, to personhood. And that phrase has kind of snuck its way into the conversation, personhood. Well, when does someone become a person? And then let's swing around on the backside of that conversation. When does someone stop being a person? When they're on life support? When they have had a traumatic brain injury and they're not as interactive? What are the boundaries in these conversations? So I wanted to talk to somebody who has a say in this conversation as well. Somebody who isn't just pontificating or has studied it or is a philosopher or, you know, whatever. I wanted to talk to other people who could have been killed. Melissa and Claire join us on the line. Melissa has been on the show before. I love the way she communicated with us. We ripped her off with time, and I said I'd get her back on the show, and here she is like a recurring nightmare. Hello, Melissa.
Yeah, you're not the first person to say that. Good afternoon.
Melissa is the survivor of a failed saline infusion abortion. She will share her story in just a minute. Claire Colwell also, by the way, Melissa, your last name is Odin. Is that how you pronounce it?
That's correct.
Okay. I get Thor just thinking about it. Hey, nothing? No joke there at all? No? Yeah?
You were very Loki to say that.
Thank you. Claire Colwell also joins us. Claire, we're going to actually have you go first, Claire. By the way, do you guys know each other and hang out? By the way, let's start again. Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Claire, do you hang out with Melissa?
We do. We have become close friends recently as we've been sharing our stories together often.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to say, Melissa, I'd like to introduce you to Claire, but you guys hang out a heck of a lot. So is there such a thing as like an abortion survivors club? Is that a thing, Melissa?
That's what they call it. It's actually called the Abortion Survivors Network. But yes, it's kind of nicknamed a special club.
Okay. I'll believe it. Claire, your story, I watched a video and you were sharing your story. And, oh, man, you know, obviously you guys are on the show because there's a heck of a story in both of your lives, you know? So let's get into it, and then I'm going to ask you a couple of kind of follow-up questions at the end. So for the sake of time, Claire, what the heck? Let me see if I get... I want to summarize it, okay? Let me summarize it, and you tell me how I screwed up. Ready?
Great.
Great. Your birth mother's mother, so your birth grandmother, said to your birth mother, you're pregnant? Okay, that's not cool. You need to get an abortion. Let's go get an abortion. Your birth mother has an abortion. And then maybe one of her friends or somebody goes, hey, you're kind of big there. What's going on? You're pregnant? And they go back and check, and wow, yeah, she is pregnant. Didn't realize it was twins. We only killed one of the babies. That sounds like the language I'm using there sounds like I have an opinion in this already. And then you came along because they couldn't abort you, because if they aborted you, that would have had an impact, a detrimental impact on your mother, on your birth mother. How's that summary?
That's right. So my birth mother had a D&E dismemberment abortion, which is still a common abortion procedure that's used today. At that stage of pregnancy, she was around 20 weeks. And so after they realized there was still one baby, that was me, they requested a second abortion that day, and they even went to Kansas to request a third, or make a third request for an abortion. But because it was too dangerous, they weren't able to do that. And so I was born at 30 weeks, weighed 3 pounds, had a dislocated hip and clubbed feet from being a twin. But miraculously, other than tearing the sac that I was in, the abortion instruments didn't touch me. And so I survived that abortion.
Help me understand the D&E thing. I don't understand.
So my birth mother had an abortion around 20 weeks. And so that is a dismemberment abortion. And so they will suction out the amniotic fluid that's around the baby, and then they will use abortion instruments to dismember the baby and pull the baby out piece by piece.
At that point in your life, again, I'm kind of, I don't know a lot about this. I do have an emotional reaction to that stuff, as I think many will, and that's why your story is out there. It's because your story pokes at the heart of people when they think about this. But at that point in your life, you had limbs, you had a heartbeat, you had enough of a formation that when we take a picture of you, we look at you and go, okay, yeah, that's a little human. That's not a few cells. True story?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. How do you, Claire, respond when someone says to you, well, that's your story, but what about the story of this woman who blah, blah, blah happened to and blah, 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 they found themselves in this position and it's not their fault and this is a horrible scenario and they need to have the right, because it's their body, to do what they want?
Yeah, you know, the key word I think that you used there is woman and her body, because that conversation is important. I mean, my birth mother was a woman, and she had her own body, and she did have the right to do with her body what she wanted. What she didn't realize, what she wasn't told, was that I had a separate body. I was a separate woman or baby that would grow up to be a woman inside of her, and nobody acknowledged, nobody cared about my rights and my body. And my birth mother, you know, was told that this wasn't an ideal situation. This wasn't her choice or something that she wanted. And it's something that took away her happiness, stole her life for far too long. And so not only did that abortion not fix her problem and not serve her in any way, it actually denied her rights as a woman, a 13-year-old little girl, and it denied my rights because she was lied to and I wasn't even given the chance to have a right.
Okay, so you just threw in a bit of information there that made my head spin. Your birth mother was 13 when this went down?
She was.
Good night.
Yeah. She didn't have a choice in this either, if you think about it.
Sure. Sure. It's interesting how you say that. And by the way, hold on. I got to back up a little bit. And Melissa, I'm going to come to you in a second. But I need to say this. I've had people come up to me, friends, and they've said, Drew, I want to, can we meet for a beer? Female friends, can we meet for a beer? I want to talk to you about something. I say, sure, yeah. So we sit down and we talk. And they start stumbling through their words. And eventually it comes out that they've had an abortion and they just need to talk about it. And the first thing they want to kind of get from me is, do I judge them? And I've had some incredible conversations. So let me just tell anybody that is listening who has had an abortion. It's going to be offensive when we start using terms like murder. It's going to upset you. And I don't know how to recover from that. Like, I don't know how to balance those two sides, but I may have been able to do it with conversations with real friends, with real people, sitting down over a pint. Maybe it was the pint that helped, or six. but, it, you know, I don't know how to communicate this to you. Nobody can do anything that surprises me, number one, and no one can do anything that will have me say to them, I do not want you in my life anymore. And I've thought through that, because think about the scenarios. Man, I could throw out some wicked scenarios. Just recently, we heard about a woman in Chicago who answered a Facebook ad trying to get some baby clothes from somebody. And she shows up and they murder her and cut her baby out. Really? That doesn't surprise you, Drew? No. Given the right set of circumstances, anybody can do anything. Really? You'd be okay with those people still in your life? It's pretty hard for me to see zero light in somebody. Zero. I'm a hope junkie. I don't know how to navigate this conversation. Melissa, maybe you can help me a little bit here. I don't know how to navigate this conversation. Having a point of view, am I not allowed to have a frickin' point of view? Frickin' is the real strong word I can use these days.
It's okay, I got the bleep button ready.
Okay. Am I not allowed to have a point of view? No, you're a dude. Really? Come on. So I do have a point of view. Am I willing to say that there's a certain scenario that maybe I haven't thought of and I might be, yeah, okay, probably. So it's not a carte blanche across the board, you know, never in my land will you ever be able to. I don't know why I started sounding Nazi there, but at the same time, I really, really hurt for not only the baby, but for the mother. I really, really do hurt. And I'm not sitting there on some high righteous horse. Melissa, help me out of this conversation.
Well, I think we both can. Claire would probably say the same thing I would, which is, you know, that we care about the child, not only because we were that child, but because we see the humanity in every unborn child, regardless of the circumstances they were conceived in, no matter what circumstances they're going to face in their life. But at the same time, we also care deeply for women. We have read the research, right? We've listened to women, not just our own biological mothers, but other women who talk about, right, the depression, the anxiety, the greater risk of suicide, the fact that women are still dying in abortion procedures today, that some women are left with health complications as a result of an abortion procedure that leaves them unable to bear children in the future, right? That list could go on and on. You know, I guess, you know, like you, not only do I have a pony in this race, but my mind is in the race too, not just my heart, right? My mind that says, I read the research, I know people's experiences, and why are we as a culture denying the truth about what abortion does to people? There is no other health issue that I'm aware of, right? No other social issue that we avoid having a real conversation about like we do abortion, Drew.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Melissa, you've shared your journey on our show. Well, an abbreviated version of your journey on our show. But you know, when I think about the way both of you were almost murdered, I cringe, you know? Oh, which is better, to be sucked apart and your limbs torn from your body, or for you to be toxically scalded by saline and burnt? Am I getting this? Like, what was the attempt here again? Help me understand this abortion technique.
Yeah, so I survived, as you shared, a saline infusion. That was the most common procedure in the 1970s. You know, it cracks me up because right now, people who do want to actually acknowledge that we exist will say, well, you know, your case is irrelevant because they don't perform this procedure anymore. Yeah, no, that's cop-out, right? And the reason why they stopped performing that procedure is because too many of us lived. The abortion industry admitted that. So, yeah, that type of procedure involved injecting this toxic salt solution into the amniotic fluid. And as you shared, it was meant to poison and scald me to death. I soaked in it for 5 days. They believed that the abortion had been successful. They induced my birth mother's labor on the fifth day, and I was accidentally born alive.
Hate when that happens.
Yeah, well, we're called the dreaded complication for that very reason.
What? I'm dying to know what the pushback would be from someone who opposes your point of view in this conversation. What has someone said to you, a survivor of a saline abortion? Like, what are the good points? And I mean, you disagree with them, but they're good points. You can kind of see, but what are the points? What do they push back with?
I don't know that I've ever gotten a point where I went, oh, yeah, let me think about that. That's a good one. No, I don't. I've never had a good one. You know, I can tell you what some of the most frequent ones are here recently, right? I mean, first of all, we've been told we're imaginary, we don't exist. I mean, that's kind of been happening, right?
I don't even understand that. What?
Yeah.
No, I don't understand it. Help me understand how someone says to your face that you're imaginary. I don't get that. What's their point?
Yeah, well, they say, you know, their point, right, obviously, is that we somehow must be lying. These things didn't really happen, right? I have my medical records. The abortion industry, you know, there were people from NARAL sitting in a judiciary committee recently that I was testifying before. And here I am telling my story, talking about my medical records, and they're tweeting out, abortion survivors are imaginary. These people don't exist. No. So, I mean, that tends to be, right, those kind of comments. They don't exist. You know, the one that's kind of popped up in the last week or so with all of this pro-life legislation being passed is, you know, women particularly being just full of anger, saying, you know what, you are so rare. You are so rare that you don't even get to have a conversation in this. Hmm.
So they're saying that the people who have survived abortions, those numbers are so low that their voice doesn't matter.
Yes.
Right. I remember that same conversation being used with when it came to the gay community. The percentage of homosexuals in our community is so low that their voices actually don't really matter. How's that working? Okay. Claire, I want to back up and say, holy crap, I can't believe your story, and I'm so happy that you're alive. But the complications in your celebration can get weird because your sister's dead.
Right.
How have you processed that? How do you celebrate life knowing that your sister was terminated? How do you celebrate? Well, let's even go back to your mom, your birth mother. You know, because as far as I understood, did you not go on this search to find your birth mother and thank her for life?
Yeah, when I was 21, I decided to find my birth mother, and that's how I learned about her abortion and about my survival and that I was even a twin. And so for 21 years, I had no idea about any of this. All I knew was that I had been a premature baby and had some medical problems, and I didn't know what had caused that. And so I was on the hunt to find some answers and to thank her for giving me my life. And obviously, I never imagined that I would find out what I did surrounding my birth and surrounding my survival. And so when I found out that I was a twin, I mean, obviously it was completely shocking. I don't even know that I still, even today, can grasp the fact not only that I survived something that was meant to take my life, but that I was a twin. But it gave me some hope and some meaning and purpose behind my own life, because I knew that obviously I had survived for a reason, and I believe that that reason is to give a face and a voice and a name, just like Melissa, to that unborn baby that's part of this discussion, because so often it's hard to put a name and a face and a story with that child. And so, you know, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it's like to be a twin. I don't know what I'm missing. I've heard from other people that, gosh, I saw something horrific, and I am missing this huge piece of my life and of my puzzle. But I have hope, because I, through this story and through my birth mother's tears and through her pain and through my survival, hopefully less and less women like her and less children like Melissa and I will experience this.
Is your birth mother part of your life today?
She is. We don't live near each other, and so we don't see each other as often as I would like, but we have a wonderful relationship. I have completely forgiven her. You know, that's one of Melissa and I's strongest messages that I hope people hear from both of us, is that we have forgiven our birth mothers and that there is hope and healing after an abortion.
Melissa, are you in touch with your birth mother?
I am, yes. My birth mother and I actually live in the same metro community. We didn't know that when we moved here 6 years ago. So yeah, my birth mother and I live in the same community. So does one of my half-sisters. We have an amazing relationship. I love her. She loves me. You know, we don't fit the narrative, right? We don't fit this predominant narrative when it comes to abortion, specifically when it comes to us being at odds with one another, right? I mean, I think there's a beautiful story and a lesson to be learned in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, it still is a vexing scenario for me. I don't think I've ever used that word, vexing. Yeah, until I see something or hear something, and I mean, I'm not sitting here in some unteachable, unmovable position, but until such a time as something, as another piece of information or scenario changes my mind, I'm still incredibly thankful that my mother, my birth mother, allowed me to be born. And while I have a position right now that life begins at conception, not personhood, while I have that opinion right now, I'm just filled with empathy, not hate, not judgment, not hate. Well, how can you not have judgment if you think someone's committed a murder, blah, blah, blah? Well, I've been to prisons and hung out with prisoners who have done these things, and I didn't pronounce judgment on them. Given the right set of circumstances, anybody can do anything. And I mean that in ways of, well, you know, breaking the law or doing things that maybe the rest of us would, you know, think is not right. Oh, there is no right or wrong. Nah, I don't know how far that boat can get up the stream. I don't even know what that phrase means. Tim, can you rescue me again, please? I'm struggling on this because
I don't have any paddles either.
No,
so.
But here's the thing. And Melissa, I know that there's a woman listening who has had an abortion and is going to feel judged by me because I think abortion is not the best way forward. Because I think conception is life. So therefore, what's the term? Therefore, it's a murder. I know they're going to feel judged by me for this. And I don't know how to lead with empathy.
No, don't. And I would say don't beat yourself up with that, right? I mean, I entered into this coming public, and I'm sure Claire feels the same way, right? I was so fearful of sharing my story because I didn't want women who had abortions to feel judged or condemned.
Right.
And what I had to learn in the midst of it was, first of all, it's about the message, right? I mean, I am so passionate about life, but I'm just as passionate about love and forgiveness. And honestly, Drew, I would tell you that I was just at dinner the other night with two women who had had abortions and who now work side by side, me in this fight for life. So I think you would be surprised how many women who had abortions who would say, you know what, I was coerced, I was forced, I didn't know the truth, I felt like it was my only option, I wish I had done something different. You know what, they would be grateful that you see the truth of abortion, and when you say you're a hope junkie, they'll believe you.
Claire, I spoke to a woman the other day who works at one of the, I don't even know the terms again, I really am a dopey male.
Can confirm that.
No, what's the places where someone has, crisis pregnancy center. So she works at a crisis pregnancy center, which sadly are only kind of as a result of Jesus people doing this stuff. Like, why can't other people, you know, or Muslims, or why can't you have a Muslim crisis pregnancy? I don't know, maybe they exist. Anyway, my point is, this lady said to me, Drew, yes, I'm a Christian. Yes, I am part of this crisis pregnancy center. We want to be a support for people who are sitting there going, holy crap, I'm pregnant. What do I do? So we want to be a support for these people. And she said to me, and Claire, I want your pushback on this, or your thoughts. She said to me, it is a myth to say that the vast majority of women who have had abortions are crumbling afterwards in life, hating themselves, and their life has fallen apart. She says there are very many women who have had abortions who are just peachy, and life is going along just fine. What are your thoughts on that, Claire?
From experience, most of the women that I have met have been deeply hurt, and the course of their life has been changed forever at the hand of their abortion. And I think that we can look at people who pretend almost like their life is going back to normal. Like my birth mother never once spoke about it, never told anyone that she regretted her abortion for 21 years until she re-faced what she had done. Mm-hmm. And that's when her healing journey began. And even these people that are women that are shouting their abortions, I think that that's coming from a place of deep hurt and deep regret, where they can't even go back and revisit those feelings, can't face what they've done. And so they say that it's all fine.
Okay.
But from experience, I think that most women do regret their abortion.
Melissa? Your word on the same question, same scenario. What do you think?
Oh, I would agree with that. You know, most women do share that there is regret. I think at some level, women do experience that. The question is whether they can, you know, be in a position where they can identify that, discuss it, right? That's a greater question, I think, that all of us need to consider and face, right? Is, do we live in a culture that would allow women the opportunity to even say that, nonetheless walk through it, right? I mean, I think no matter what people believe about abortion, I think we need to really look at our culture.
Well, Melissa and Claire are both abortion survivors. And Melissa and Claire can both be brought in as speakers if you go to ambassadorspeakers.com, ambassadorspeakers.com. Melissa, I'm so glad we were able to get you back again. And Claire, thank you for joining us and being part of this horrifically awkward conversation hosted by two dudes.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. What's that, Melissa?
This will be the last time we're on the show with you, huh? That's what it sounds like?
That's it. Swan song. Done. Bye-bye now. That's why I've finally decided we can talk a little bit about this topic. Anyway, ladies, thank you very, very much. I wish you both, I don't know, I'm trying not to be schmaltzy here, but thank you. I guess what I want to say is thank you for being passionate about this issue without being jerks. How's that?
Right, I gotcha.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, girls.